Welcome back to the Mel Kay Show. My favorite of the Justice League warriors on the front lines to save America and the world is joining me again today. Patrick Byrne, welcome back. Everyone knows you and loves you. Thank you for coming.
Mel, great to be on the show. I'm happy to talk to you with your viewers today.
Oh, great. Yeah, you know, it's people don't know. I mean, a lot of people know a lot about you, but like we talked about last time, to reiterate, well before the 2008 crash, Patrick Byrne was out there sounding the alarm for anyone that would listen that the pending doom for the markets was coming. And you got some traction, but not quite enough. And so it came to be. And right now we're seeing a lot of confusion. I think the average person doesn't understand they're talking about tapering, and we know that there's inflation and all kinds of stuff going on. And I just wanted to check in with you on where we are in your mind on the level of all this stuff that we're watching. And people really don't understand anything that's going on. They just hear all these words and it means nothing. So where are we in the financial and banking sector at this moment?
Okay. Well, good to be on. Sounds like today's going to be a little academic more than... but I'm happy to explain it. I used to teach this stuff. I'm happy to explain it in ways that people can follow. At some point, so economies, we create central banks. One of the reasons is because there's this view that without them, you go through these booms and busts. But if you have a central bank, they can sort of modulate the booms and busts by being loose with money sometimes, pushing money out of it, being restrictive, and that they're modulate that. In practice, with 100 years of history, it's been a disaster. We shouldn't have gone to central banking. It was legalized in 1846 in Britain, and it's just not a good system. So here we are. This, one of the things, there's always, the reason it's not a good system, there's always this political pressure to turn, you know, if things start to turn into juice the economy with more free money. Well, it's a little bit like an alcoholic who knows if he stops drinking, when he goes to sleep, he's going to wake up with a huge headache. And how do I fight that off? Well, I'm going to have another bottle and I'll delay it. Well, that's a strategy that works for a while. And then when you wake up and you have that hangover, you drink real quick to get rid of it. That works for a while, but eventually there's a day where you collapse. There's the monster hangover you can't drink your way out of. Well, the economy is like that. If what you do is you try to, instead of let the economy sort of grow at one stable rate over time, politicians succumb to this desire to make themselves look good and juice things with this, you know, performance enhancement of making, you know, the Fed print money one way or another. You can juice things for a while, but eventually the hangover that comes destroys you. And what has happened for decades, really for 40 years since Alan Greenspan, every time the economy started to slump, we juiced our way out of it. Think of the 97 financial crash and then the dot-com crash.
Right.
The central bank came in and to prevent there from being a recession. And after 9/11, they splurge and they push all this money into the economy. And they make banking so banks can lend money easily and such. And then it happened again in 08. But from 08 forward, it's been kind of ridiculous. They've just had basically zero interest rate money. So to switch metaphors, and I'll close on this, Mel, you can think of this, another way to think of it is like an old man in an oxygen tent. Imagine he's really, really sick, but if you flood him with oxygen under pressure, you know, he might be able to be okay, be okay and hold a conversation, and people might think that he's healthy, right, not understanding that if you actually just the moment you cut that, there's going to be rapid degeneration. Right. Well, these guys have driven into a monetary roach motel. If they stop doing what they're doing, we're going to have a hangover of all hangovers. Right. If they keep doing what we're doing, we're going to have hyperinflation. And it's the way they can balance those two things is getting tighter and tighter and tighter.
Right. And that's where we are right now. And people are starting to see it at the gas tank. People are seeing it in the supermarkets. People are seeing it everywhere. And it's starting to affect the people. And I think last we spoke, a lot of people could stay out of the game, be apathetic about what's happening in America until it started to really affect them. And I think as we get closer to the holidays, it's going to get even worse. But what can the average person be doing right now to protect themselves, because it does look like it's a runaway train.
If everything goes up in smoke and a hyperinflationary collapse, and I was saying on a there's a wonderful paper by someone who lived through Argentina in 1990. One day we were living in a normal modern country with, say, out of 10 people, there's one rich guy and one or two poor people, and then sort of six, maybe seven middle class people of different types. And then for 1 week, there was all this craziness. And the next Monday, there's one rich person and nine dirt poor people. Right. Overnight, your country has changed into that. And that is, I fear what's going to happen. And they're going to use that moment to introduce a bunch of bad stuff. But here's how you protect yourself. Real assets. If you own real assets, by which I mean gold, silver, or real estate, or a car, or something physical, right, that you will keep. But everything that you have in the financial system might go up in smoke if that comes. And so your financial assets, and what I discovered in 05 through 08, that big fight I was in with Wall Street, right, was basically that I had learned that they were taking fractional reserve banking and applying it to the stock market. So you're going to discover that your broker may be telling you own 100 shares of IBM, but you're going to find out it turns out three different people are being told they own those 100 shares. Right. And everyone gets all kinds of craziness like that is built into the system.
Yeah. And that's very, very interesting, because we are at a place where, unfortunately, a lot of people are being lulled into taking money from the government, all of these programs. I mean, they're literally giving out money to people that just because they have kids, not even because they need the money. And what I'm seeing is this communist, Marxist growth of depending on the government. Can you, not that everyone doesn't know, but can you please explain what this expansion of this welfare state has done in the past and could do now? I feel like we have to reject this by all means, but we're, they can't even find people to hire in a lot of places. It's really bad.
Well, their decisions are so bad, you have to wonder, are they incompetent or are they trying to make things bad? How I like to think of it, my pop was an actuary, which is a mathematician under insurance. So I grew up with this sense of what's called actuarial soundness. An insurance company, life, plain old boring business, earnings like this, the guy running it can cheat. He can sort of claim that he's making more money than he's really making for the company if he doesn't keep his books right and he doesn't keep his reserves as full as they should. And what this means is over time, there'll be kind of a metaphysical pothole in his balance sheet that will explode. Well, I one time pointed to my friend Buffett, Buffett and
Got it.
And 20 years ago, I said to him something like, the federal government is being run like a massive, well, before I even get there, that's what's going on. The federal government is a massive insurance company. And it's not being run on actuarially sound principles. And the social safety net is like a crooked insurance company that is just, it's created this big pothole. It's all going to crash. I've always wondered all my life, how can the left so blithely go about this? They have to understand this isn't sustainable, what's going on. And I finally get it. It never made sense to me. Now I get it. Their plan always was, that's how they take us down. They're going to bankrupt these. Their system, their approach destroys us, and then they hope they emerge out of the rubble in charge of everything.
Right,
that's their plan. So that's the problem. And well, that's what's going on. That's what's going on. So which of your seven questions did I leave unanswered? That's what's going on.
No, I get it. Now, as for our supply chain and what's going on at the ports and all of this stuff. To me, it looks like it's on purpose, and that they, like you said, they're trying to bankrupt America. And we've discussed before how, because we travel around the country and talk to people and meet the folks, and they've really gutted America in so many ways. And I'm a firm believer that if we can turn the ship around, that we could rebuild America from the inside out. And I think people should be looking at what's going on at the borders and the supply chain and why America doesn't produce everything here. So what do you think of that?
I actually think that there's this crossroads we're coming to. We are going to go through a bad period, And we're going to have this question. Do we want to emerge as a goon authoritarian state like the left wants, or we can go through and fix everything at once and fix everything at once and emerge as the United States we used to know, with everything sort of all cleaned up, the whole financial system cleaned up. We have that choice, that moment, that's actually the choice we're going to get. And depending on which route we take is a question of how corrupt we are. But the left doesn't want that. The left, having built an e-commerce company, I know a thing or two about supply chains. This collapse on the left coast, it's Americans, if you're not into supply chains, you don't quite understand yet what's going to happen. These aren't the type of things that, like, if you just lift your foot off the hose, if you're stepping on a hose and then you lift it off, everything flows through and everything's fine. Supply chains are intricate, and all kinds of effects are starting to kick in, downstream cascading effects that do all this damage. And it doesn't matter if when you lift your foot off the hose, everything just doesn't come back to life. Corporations get wiped out, jobs get wiped out, all kinds of things. And so now you have these big problems in the car industry because all kinds of companies can't get the chips that modern cars run on and so forth. So, and when those plants shut and those workers are laid off and then those workers stop going to that local bar and then that bar closes and all these cascading effects, it isn't like 60 days later when the ships start coming in with the chips, oh, everything just works again.
Right.
This is causing permanent damage. And I think it's so incompetent. One has to wonder if it's deliberate.
It has to be deliberate. There's no explanation because I think that because of the speed at which it happened, and I think it was already planned. But when they planned to that Trump could not win the election no matter what, they also planned, and they already had the plan to bankrupt America, in my opinion. Now we have something that's going on that's being called the billionaires tax, which has nothing to do with the billionaires. It really will be the tax on the middle class. But we're hearing about this, and I don't know much about finance, but I know you do. And I wanted to ask you, what does it mean when Janet Yellen is saying that she'd like to tax unrealized gains? What does this mean?
If you have, suppose you have $100,000 of stock, and the stock, the market goes up. And at the end of the year, it's worth $150,000. You haven't sold it. You just have it as stock. The account has gone up and you've made the $50,000 in the account, but you haven't actually realized the gains. You didn't sell it. You don't have that $50,000 sitting in your bank. Just your stock went up. Maybe that they would tax you on that $50,000 that you had made, even though you haven't actually sold your stock and gotten the cash back. Which is kind of crazy because, you know, if you take that thinking to the extreme, it means, which it eventually will, it means the house, as your house fluctuates in value, each year it goes up. If the value of the house went up, even if you didn't sell it, you'd be paying some extra tax because you got more valuable. It's kooky talk, and it tells you that there's all kinds of ways to fix this. There's just no way to fix it without causing a few hundred really rich guys to get their asses handed to them. There's all kinds of, what we really need to do is emerge from the rubble, emerge from whatever this restructuring is. You know, the social programs, which now occupy over $3 trillion we're spending, they were designed 90 years ago and 50 to 60 years ago. And we've learned a lot since then. And I would argue that they've done very poorly. The amount of money that's gone in, you know, there's, for every dollar of poverty in the United States, there's like $6 to $12 going in to address poverty. Well, that means if it were effective, there wouldn't be any poverty. But I look around, I see a lot of poverty. So something's wrong with the way these programs were built. We've learned a lot. There's a different way to build. The way you actually build them, this is going to shock you. It's a combination of two things. And one of them is UBI. It's a flat tax and UBI. And you couple them together. And my hero and mentor, friend Milton Friedman, he introduced this in 1965.
Wow.
In the freedom. And it's actually, he said, if you're going to build the social safety net, this is how you do it. And some magical things happen when you combine a flat tax with a UBI. You can reduce over the universal basic income. You can reduce all your social safety net and all your arguments to two numbers. And the numbers might be something like a 25% flat tax, but every adult gets a $15,000 check once a year or something like that, or a $10,000 check and $5,000 voucher towards healthcare.
Right.
And you do those two things and you eliminate the rest of your 68,000 pages of tax code.
Wow, that's pretty genius.
Yeah. Problem is Congress doesn't want it because Congress is in the business of, basically, they are in the business, their product that they sell is a congressman. In my district, I'm getting this special carve out that's worth $1 billion a year to the pumice industry in the United States. And they're all in the business of selling these little things and getting money and votes for it. So they don't want a simple system that's like, everyone's got a 25% flat tax, but you get $15,000 a year given to you. That simple way is actually what we have to do. Is we have to get out of this, we may have to introduce a second currency, and you do all the smart things in the new currency, and you leave your old currency to the currency that everything just runs off.
Right. Yeah. Well, that sounds like a good idea, but that's actually brilliant. Cause a lot of people, when you hear UBI, people say, they get crazy, but that's a different way to present it. It is more like what you just said.
UBI coupled to a flat tax, and you junk all your other social safety programs. Look, we have to take care of three groups: old people, sick people, and poor people.
Right.
And for no other reason, we've told them for decades we would. They planned the end of their life. So we're going to take care of old people, sick people, and poor people. You don't, the current meshugis, as my Jewish friends would say. Are you a Jewish? The current meshugis, the 68,000 pages of tax code, the super arcane, all the social policy, the social safety net. And in fact, not only is it terribly and inefficiently designed, arguably it's had an extraordinarily pernicious effect on the poor. In particular, I'd say the Black community. You know, Lyndon Johnson passed the Great Society program, and then they sent out federal agents into the Black. Thomas Sowell likes to point out that the Black community used to have a lower out-of-wedlock birth rate than the white. Right. And a higher job force participation. They sent out federal agents to all the northern cities, to the tenements, saying, to sit with couples and say, husband, wife, if the husband leaves, we can start paying you X amount per month. And what do you know? They got all these Black couples to split up, 75% now are out of wedlock. And that's been enormously pernicious. And I'm sorry that centered this narrative.
No. That's the truth. And
it's terrible. And everyone in the Black community knows it now. Anyone who's honest, they tell me that. They can't.
Yeah, me too.
It's horrible for the Black community. And so if you design UBI, what's beautiful about UBI, it means any two poor people can actually cohabit and really make it work. If you got $15,000, you got 30 grand, maybe one of you holds a minimum wage job, there's 20 grand. Any two people can make 50 grand a year. That would be a better anti-poverty program than anything that's been introduced. And you do that, and then something special anyway. So there's ways to fix all this.
Right.
They want to fix it by taking us out of this disaster and turning us into the United Socialist States of America.
Right. And the other side of that, and what you're talking about, is that without work, without merit, without earning it, without all this stuff, there's a psychological cost. There's a mass depression, mass suicide, drug addiction. All of this are side effects of that handout world, because that's what I see. And
I don't like to go in, because I think billionaires get even bigger handouts, and we don't piss and moan about that as much as we should. Yeah, I think at this point, it's probably not great for long-term human psychology, but it's better. That's not the handouts. If we're going to do a social safety net, which we have to do, and we promise to do, this is the way to do it. It's super simple and cheap, and it'd be far better. And that's another aspect, because under the current systems, as you start making money, it degrades what you get in your social safety net.
Right.
Under the system of a UBI, you make 15, you get to start with 15 grand, and then whatever you make, you're keeping 75 cents. So there's none of that disincentive to work.
Right. Right. Well, that's the thing that I'm talking about, is I have friends, and I have, sadly, over this 2 years of handouts, I had friends that were like, I'm going to stay on unemployment as long as I can. And I'm thinking, but if you go get your job back, you're going to make three times the unemployment. And they're like, as long as I'm getting free money.
I'd rather have a third of the wage. They'd rather have a third the wage and get to play Ghost Recon 8 hours a day more.
It's a mental prison of some sort that people get locked into. And also a lot of people don't go out there and try to achieve because they want their welfare. And I think it keeps a lot of people down. But universal basic income with a tax attached to it that could encourage people to go out there and do something and be something and live a healthy life and not end up, you know, in poverty is a great idea. Now, just to jump to your other topic that you've been fighting fearlessly, we had an election. And I think New Jersey looks like should be audited tomorrow. But on top of that, I think a lot of people are
Have they called it for Murphy?
And we saw it flip overnight, just like with Trump.
Same old.
And like you said, you've been yelling it for as long as you've been out there talking about it, that if we didn't go back and fix it, it was just going to happen again. And I believe it did. But here's what I want to ask you about. So Youngkin wins in Virginia. And a lot of people are real excited and they're talking about there was a red wave and all of this. To me, it seems like people are getting way ahead of themselves because we still didn't fix 2020 or all the cheating stuff. And people, I just don't want people to get complacent or rhinos to act like, you know, okay, it's fixed. So what are your thoughts on that?
Thank you so much, Mel, for letting me address that. I think that they're right to celebrate. We landed a real haymaker of a punch. And, you know, 12 months ago today, we were all waking up saying, what the heck just happened? I like to compare it to, being Irish, I probably use barroom brawls, but it's like you're standing minding your own business at a brawl and some guy you barely know, didn't think you had a beef with them, came up and smashes you in the head with a bottle. And next thing you know, you're on the ground. They never expected us to get up. This was all supposed to be normalized by March. We have gotten up to their surprise. We cleared our head. We danced for a bit. And now we've landed a haymaker of a punch on them. So it is a cause to celebrate, but we still have a fight in front of us.
Right.
However, I do feel that their narrative is crumbling all over. Is their narrative? There's something in chess. I'm going to switch metaphors again, if I may.
Oh, I love it. I love your metaphors.
There's something in chess called a pawn advance. When I have to play people who are better than I am in chess, which are many, and you, I often use this technique because you know that they're going to see the brilliant Bobby Fischer moves, you know, before you do stuff. So a pawn advance is this very modest thing where you're playing, you're not doing big, you're doing this very modest, you know, whenever you get a chance, you're just advancing your most minor pieces. The other side often doesn't see it coming. They just don't see it coming because these seem like, yeah, they're just pawns coming at me there. And then before you know it, you get to this point where you're starting to trip up their whole game. And you swarm them with a pawn advance. It's what I always do against better and more powerful players. Well, that's what's happened here. This is breaking loose. The Maricopa thing is breaking loose over a dozen or maybe two dozen other states to do the same stuff. And the Maricopa, I mean, it's silly. Anyone who's now an election fraud denier after Maricopa, the people erased a million files and have 255,000 made up ballots. And they probably have 400,000 illegal ballots, fraudulent ballots. I'll give you a piece of news. No one else knows, but now I've learned I can share this. When that election report, when the cyber ninjas delivered that, there was a lot of tears about, they didn't use the word fraud. They didn't use the word illegal. Well, no one knows this yet. First time this being said publicly. That was all insisted upon by the Senate and by the good people in the Senate, not as a means of covering up, but they just decided this is so serious that we don't think the computer technicians should be saying we found fraud. The computer technicians should be just reporting on how many deleted files there are and this and that, what people did, turning that over to a guy with a badge and a gun. And the guy with a badge and a gun is the guy who's going to say fraud, if anyone's going to say it. So I'm okay with that. So this is not getting covered up. Maricopa is serious as a heart attack.
Right.
And there's going to be 20 Maricopas before the year's out. Maybe before the year's out. There's going to be 20 Maricopas springing up around the country. We're in touch with all kinds of states who smell blood.
Yeah. And something that I've talked about quite a bit, but it looks like the Racine, Wisconsin sheriff is talking about it now, too. The fraud all over the country in these nursing homes and these homes for the mentally disabled. It is such a disgusting tactic, and it looks like it was used everywhere.
200,000 votes in Wisconsin came from 200,000 fake votes. Biden won by 20,000. In a normal year in Wisconsin, there's about 65,000 votes they call indefinitely confined. That's someone nursing home, can't even fill out things for themselves or mental, and they get together and they sit and they figure out if they can figure out what the person's wishes were. If they can't.
Right.
This time, the election, state election officials wrote a letter telling the nursing home. And by the way, that's spelled out in the Wisconsin statute. That's the law that the, and you know, this document says, the Constitution says, right, the people who decide this are the state legislatures. The state legislature of Wisconsin said, this is how it works. Those people have 2x2 visits, Democrat, Republican, to the nursing home. What is it, you, et cetera. This year, the election official said, don't do that. You folks in the nursing homes, just do it yourselves for your patients. Well, no one authorized them to do that. The state legislature totally contradicts what the legislature said, which is supposed to govern for these guys. No one told these election bureaucrats they can completely change the character. Well, guess what? That 65,000, which is normal, became 265,000. So for the last three elections, every time, it's their last two elections, each time it's 65,000. This time, 265,000. Those extra 200,000, that's, you know.
Well, also, they also kept, they also kept all those people isolated from their family and people that would visit them, that would even give them, find out that it was true. There was no way to even analyze it. It's complete theft of these people's lives.
What ticked the sheriff off, or what triggered the investigation, was there was a woman who contacted them who said this set of facts. I checked into my mom. I put her in this nursing home some years ago. I saw that she voted. I decided to check. I've heard about this election fraud stuff. I did to check county records, and I discovered that she voted on November 3rd. Well, and then I wrote the nursing home, and the nursing home said, well, we just looked into, because my mother had dementia. She didn't, with this woman, she didn't even remember anyone after JFK. So, but the nursing home said they had voted her vote. Well, and so that's why they shouldn't have voted the vote for a woman who couldn't remember anyone after JFK. And in addition, it turns out the woman died October 1st. So why is she voting on November 3rd? So that is the event that made the sheriff look into it. And he discovered there's 200,000. This happened all over the state.
Yeah. When I've been going out talking, I've been telling people that they have the right to find out if what their vote was and make sure that it was the right thing. And people have gotten back to me and said they've checked to see, you know, that their vote was correct and all that. They find out that they waited online for 5 hours and all that. They're finding out that they were mail-in voting and it was for Biden. But also a lot of people are finding out that they didn't vote at all, and they did in person. Every American citizen can do this, and I think everyone should.
This is so phenomenally disrespectful to the personhood of your other citizens. Yeah, in Maricopa, I'll run you through the numbers. There are 2.6 million people, registered voters in Maricopa. 2.6 million, the records show 2.1 million voted on November 3rd. That means 500,000 didn't vote.
Right.
Of those 500,000, if you ask them, 170,000 say, yeah, I did vote.
Right.
34% say, I did vote. I absolutely voted. I drove down, my wife and I, we did this, we did that. They'll put in an affidavit. There's another 30,000 of the category you just said who they say they voted, and the records show they voted, but they say, I voted in person, and the records show there was no in-person vote, but a mail-in ballot was submitted. What's up with that? You know, there's 15 to 20% of the vote in Maricopa is dodgy, 15 to 20%.
Yeah. And people have to understand this election was not stolen from Donald Trump. It was stolen from you and me and every single American citizen who that vote is our right and our duty by God to keep this country going with our say by the people for the people. Now, going.
I'd like to remember this horrible picture in American history.
Yes, I do.
These some guy trying to vote in Alabama in the early 60s and the sheriffs are there with German shepherds to keep a black man from voting in Montgomery, Alabama, I think it was, or Birmingham or something. That just happened 400,000 times in Maricopa. It wasn't done with German shepherds. It's as horrible as this in a way, but it just wasn't done in this visible way. It's done in this crazy way, and the crazy way, you know, of these late last minute sudden incursions of 300,000 votes out of nowhere that swing, you know, with no record.
Yeah,
that's what that. But it's just as horrible as the sheriff standing there keeping the black man away with German shepherds. 400,000 times that happened in Maricopa.
Yeah, and how many in this country? And people should be most upset about that.
It's Jim Crow times five, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Now, so we'll wrap up here. Because you always give good solutions and encouragement, and you keep a lot of people fighting that because we can't give up now. There's no giving up. Either we save America now, or we have another. They're going to pass that HR1, and election fraud will be in the books as law. So, any advice for my viewers on going forward? Any words of wisdom and encouragement you could share would be great.
Yeah, the whole world, the free world is looking to us because it's being extinguished everywhere. Remember the last time it all went out, it went out for 1,000 years when the Roman Empire fell, where there was at least some concept of citizenship and something beyond tribals and such. It went out for 1,000 years. The world is looking to us. We have them. We really do have them.
Yeah.
I mean, it's crumbling. It's that point in the fight now where we got off the floor to their surprise and they still were laughing at us and they didn't change their game and we started boxing pretty well. And now we've landed a haymaker and they know they're in a fight. In fact, I kind of like our position, right? But the thing that gives us all our power is the American people. It's the power. It's the we're just here trying to shape and help and educate and make some connections. If anyone wants to help, General Mike Flynn and I built, I think, a beautiful system to do it. It's called the America Project. Go to theamericaproject.com. It's free. Just join up, get an art, enlist in Mike Flynn's digital army.
Yes, that's the best. And it's getting more and more fun because I'm telling you, I'm seeing it all over the place. I'm watching them in Scotland, these same people. And I'm thinking, we know who you are. You just keep going out there and keep saying the same thing over and over. It's very, we get it. We're going to still save it. And like you just said, I keep telling people the one thing that really right now is standing in the way of this massive great reset and all their plans is the United States Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and our faith in God. And
We got them. I would say not on the ropes, but we have them staggered. Just stick with us. We'll have these guys. Virginia's the beginning. Let me give you one quick story. There's a man named Leon Benjamin, Bishop Leon Benjamin.
Oh, yeah, I know him.
Yeah. And we owe Virginia to him. That guy organized hundreds of volunteers. They got in the face of all the county recorders, recorded themselves saying, here are the rules. We get citizen observers. You're now on camera. They had volunteers, precinct observers, workers, everything. They went to the 300 black churches. Bishop Benjamin is black. They went to the 300 black churches that took the Kamala Harris video and played it. And they said, we're giving you a video that if you don't play, you know. And so the same 300 churches played their video. And that Virginia win that's a medal on the lapel of Dr. Leon Benjamin.
Right. And we need a lot of them. And every time we show up at events, are you going to be in San Antonio? Are you coming to that?
I will be.
Excellent. And everyone should come that can and go to, I'm going all over to littler events all over so are you, you're going everywhere. It's really because when we get together to in person, there's an energy, there's a love of God and country that people think is gone. And I believe we're the majority. and to go to these events and see people love God, love our culture, our history, our flag. It's just so refreshing. And I think it really gives people that energy and spirit to go back to their local community and do what you and General Flynn are saying, which is get involved, get out there and make a difference because it's working. And thank you so much, Patrick Byrne. You are such a fun guy and so smart. And really, I know you have no agenda other than the truth and justice. And I really appreciate every time you come on. And I will see you in San Antonio.
I look forward to it, Mel.
Me too. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.